With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
All right. What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Time and Room Podcast, the greatest, most exciting lacrosse podcast in all the galaxy, all about lacrosse, featuring my buddy Coach Dane Smith from St. Andrew's Episcopal. My name is Eric Bickle. I'm one of the sports junkies on 106.7 The Fan in D.C. and NBC Sports Washington. Dane played at Robert Morris, was a two-time captain there, and is currently the head coach at St. Andrew's in Potomac, Maryland. Coach, how's it going, buddy?
It's going good. Game week, right? Right, Mr. Bickle?
That's right. Finally, we've got the Mac back in action. And Marist Red Foxes take on the Detroit Mercy Titans, I believe is their name.
Hey, you're the color commentator. You better know
I know.
Who they are.
Did we talk about this on the air yet? Have we talked about this?
We talked about it briefly, I feel like. It's been a couple weeks. We took a couple weeks here to kind of gather our stuff. And you got a big call on Saturday.
Yeah, so
we did a little prep work earlier this week, right?
Doing a lot of prep work. We had our preseason meeting with Coach Wilkes yesterday. We got to ask him sort of the state of the team, state of the union.
God, you gotta love that shit. I mean, can't imagine.
But if I'm a head coach too,
but you got a parent in the room kind of digging. So just tell me about this number 39 kid, you know, the Bickle kid on the roster. What's the deal with him?
Number 41. Yeah,
no. 41, sorry.
I stayed away from that. I didn't ask him anything about Stevie. I kept it professional. But the backstory is for people that don't know, so at Marist, like many schools, they aren't allowing spectators yet. And so I feel sorry for all these parents that want to see their kids play. I offered, because I do like to take photos, and I took pictures at all their games last year and provided them to the coaching staff and to all the parents and the players. And I offered my services to shoot pictures this year, because I feel like pictures are going to be more valuable than ever if you're not going to allow spectators. You know, you probably need as many photographers as possible. I also threw out there, just on a lark, look, if you need any help broadcasting, I've never called a game before, but I got 25 years in radio. I'm happy to help. It's not a dream of mine by any stretch, but I'm happy to help. Anything to get me there so I can watch my kid play, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they called my bluff, and they said, how about color commentating? And I said, absolutely, let's go. I've been doing my homework. I mean, thank God they didn't ask me to do play-by-play, because I really would have not been good at that.
So let's role play here for a second. Marist gets a goal off looks like a backside seal. How are you going to talk about that?
I don't have to be as eloquent and as smart as you. I just have to say, wow, great job. I mean, that's all I have to do. I just have to be me. I'm not Paul Carcaterra. I'm not Dane Smith.
I can't wait. I don't know. I can't wait.
I know the basics. I could say it's a little two-man game there from X or whatever.
You'll be like texting Coach Pugh from like Committed Combine. Hey, what just happened there?
Hey, I told you, if you see something happening, text me.
I know. I know. I'll be busy. Yeah, I know. I'll try to. But I'm excited. I'm excited to see your son play. Excited to see.
Yeah.
I mean, Kyle's lacrosse has been awesome these past few weeks.
So it's great.
A lot of stuff on
during the week too, and I finally figured out how to get my ACC network extra working, and then I guess I'm paying for Big Ten Plus, and
I'm just waiting for that conversation for my wife.
Maryland's thing, whatever that is. So I can see Alex playing.
So if we have any of the smart app people, we need a hub for all the lacrosse games that you have to pay just pay one fee, $20 a month, and you get subscription to everything that gets you all the games. Because I'm using your YouTube login, which I now have access to your email. So just to let you know that.
Yeah.
I had to buy the Big Ten Network. Right. You know, and my wife hasn't seen that charge come up yet, but that's coming. I bought the Big East Network and then canceled it immediately just so I could watch a month of like Big East games. So yeah, it's midweek. I was, you know, Robert Morris, you know, played Bellarmine on Tuesday at 1 o'clock and they live streamed to YouTube.
Yeah.
So in my office, I had the game on all day. It was amazing.
It's great. Yeah.
It was great. I mean,
if you're a lacrosse fan, you know what I do every day, and it seems like sort of the pattern. And, you know, this year's different than any other year, but like, obviously you have a weekend slate full of games typically, but like, you know, you'll have a couple games on Monday or Tuesday and maybe even a couple games on Friday, you know?
Yeah.
Every day. I just type in lacrosse, D1 lacrosse or D3, whatever you want on TV today or, you know.
I just speak into my silly Xfinity remote and say lacrosse and it just pops up. And it's you know, a lot of time replay too on ESPNU if it's not live, and it's all work out and put it on. So it's been great. A lot of super teams, a lot of really good players.
So much talent out there.
Dude, Georgetown is local team here. I mean, what the heck? They've won the combined scores like 32-3.
Yeah,
I don't care who you play. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, defensively, they're just locking people down.
Yeah, I don't know if they're winning a million faceoffs. I haven't seen their stats, so but pretty phenomenal. You know what I mean? And Maryland's doing their thing, and so we're certainly, you know, homers there. I know I'm watching selfishly for some of our, you know, St. Andrews guys, and so Stevie will be one of the last to kind of get it off this weekend. So we're excited to see him. And
can't wait.
But Amanda, we have a big hitter, and I mean, I have not gotten that nervous for these things now that we're on episode like 29, but
I
don't know if I was nervous or just, you know, excited, like just want to soak it up, you know, talking to so we had Coach Dom Starja on today. So pretty phenomenal.
Yeah. I mean, what a real legend. A guy won 4 national titles. You know, he's got a great story. We'll touch on it a little bit where he was recruited to play football at Brown, had never even really seen lacrosse. He's from New York, so he'd heard of it, but never really saw it. And then a teammate of his told him to give it a shot, and he started playing at Brown and ended up being 2-time All-Ivy and ended up not playing football his senior year, and it basically changed his life.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, not many people can make a career out of radio, which you've done, and not many people can make a career out of coaching. And he's, you know, now he's done it all, right? Pros, college, and those kids at Blue Ridge are lucky to have him, you know, as a resource down there. And I'll be interested to see, you know, where he takes that team, you know. I'm sure whatever he says, they listen, I would imagine. I would hope. So they should.
I hope they understand who's coaching them.
Yeah, no, right? If not, they should listen to our podcast, and then they'll better understand
exactly
kind of what we're dealing with. So, well, look, we're all going to be rooting for you this weekend, Eric.
Hey, don't expect too much. I'll tweet out a link.
Okay.
Hopefully we can get this podcast up before the game. The plan is for the game to actually be on the ESPN platform, so they'll grab it from there.
Okay. Yeah. Where can we watch?
I'll tweet the link. If it's not on the ESPN, like whatever they call that ESPN Plus platform as one of the games, then it'll be on the Red Fox Network. It'll be on either one. But I'm working with Connor Giblin, who was a semifinalist or honorable mention Jim Nantz Award winner. He's like a young broadcaster.
Nice. Wow.
He's like really good.
Yeah. I thought it was like Kevin Giblin's son or something. And I was like, man, that's going to be nice.
I was thinking, but no, he's from New York area. So,
yeah.
But he's really, really talented. So I'm just going to kind of sit back in the pocket, let him do the thing, and every once in a while say, let's go. But can't
I'm
wait.
Still a little, I'm still, I thought, you know, I'm still waiting for that. Hey, we want the timer room guys to call the game.
Hey, if I was any, no. You know, they asked me to call the girls game. Did I tell you that?
No, I didn't. No, you didn't tell me that.
They said, can you also do the girls? I said, look, I can barely do the guys game. I don't even know the rules for the girls game. I'm going to have to pass. I mean, I have tremendous respect for it. I just don't know the game.
So, yeah, of course. Yeah. So, now, I would pay a lot more money to hear you call that. But, good luck. You'll kill it.
Yeah, no, it's going to be a lot of fun. So, anyway, when we come back, we have a great conversation with a true legend, a Hall of Famer. Guy won 4 national titles at UVA. He's coached professionally. He's coached at the high school level, which he is right now at the Blue Ridge School. You're really going to enjoy this conversation, I think, with the legend himself, Coach Dom Starja. All right, Dane, it's my pleasure to introduce our guest today. He's a native of New York. He was a stud wide receiver in high school and apparently never played lacrosse before enrolling at Brown University. But he took up the game in college, eventually became a third-team All-American, first-team All-Ivy defenseman. After graduation, he worked in a variety of roles at Brown in the athletic department, including coaching the women's soccer team, before eventually becoming the head coach of the men's lacrosse team in 1982. He won two Ivy League championships at his alma mater before accepting the head job at the University of Virginia in 1993, where he won, are you ready for this, 4 national championships. He was inducted into the Lacrosse National Hall of Fame in 2008. He left UVA in 2016 and later coached with the PLL with the Chrome Lacrosse Club. And in November of 2020, he was named head coach of the Blue Ridge School in St. George, Virginia. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome one of the all-time greats, the legendary Coach Dom Starzha. Coach, thanks for joining us.
Eric, thank you very much. You're way too kind. And the one that jumped out on me there is calling me some kind of prolific wide receiver. I was very happy to hear that, So
Eric does a good job digging in.
I did where I grew up. I grew up on Long Island. This is going to sound strange to people. I grew up on Long Island, but I'd never seen lacrosse before I got to college. I went to Brown. I got recruited to play football. I went to Brown in the days when you had to play on freshman teams in your first year, and happened to be the captain of the freshman football team that year, and a buddy on the football team said, why don't you come out for lacrosse? And I was curious. I'd heard of it growing up on Long Island. I'd just never seen it. And so I went out for it. I was more comfortable on the athletic side of things than I was. I was, kind of struggling academically and socially. But athletics was where I was most comfortable. And so I went out for lacrosse and just fell in love with the game. And I played 2 more years of football. I played 2 years of varsity football at Brown, but I was distracted by lacrosse. And then when they changed football staffs my senior year, I didn't go out my last year, but played 4 years of lacrosse. And then when I graduated, the head lacrosse coach was also the head soccer coach. Nowadays, you wouldn't hire someone to be your first assistant in his main sport. The first day I was coaching, I became the first assistant in soccer and lacrosse. And literally, I had never kicked a soccer ball. And, nowadays, even football kids play some soccer growing up because there's so much soccer around.
Right.
But again, when I was growing up, we didn't play soccer. Right. We played football, basketball, and baseball in my town. That was it. So it's been an interesting journey along the way. And here I am.
But I bet you learned a lot from that. Because Gary Williams, I went to Maryland. And Gary Williams was a legend there, won a national title for us for Maryland. He started out coaching soccer also. I think at AU, that was the only way he could get hired to coach basketball. He had to coach a soccer team. And he was like, all right, went to the library, read some books, ran him through some drills. But he learned a lot.
That's almost exactly what happened. I look back to those early falls when I first started coaching. In the fall of 74 was my first year. So I ran the fall lacrosse by myself because the head lacrosse coach was the head soccer coach. He was worried about soccer. I was the first assistant on the men's soccer. And they made me the head women's coach, which you mentioned. And so I coached women's soccer for 3 years. And so nowadays when guys, even assistant coaches at the D1 level in particular, are just coaching lacrosse all the time, I'm actually quite grateful that I grew up and had a chance to do all these different things. It was fun, and I think it was probably healthy for me and educational at the same time.
You were doing it young, right? I mean, how old you got? 22, 23?
I was right out of college. It was my first year out of college. And I jumped right into it. Like I said, it was a rare opportunity, less likely to happen now that you'd graduate from college and be the first assistant. We had pretty good teams at Brown. So, and actually, true story is the soccer team, 2 of my first 3 years, we went to the Final Four in soccer. 1 year we lost in double overtime in the semifinals. We could have been national champs that year. I would have been I was one of the top assistant coaches on one of the best soccer teams in the country. I had no idea what was going on.
That gives a lot of people hope. I don't know if I would be say that too loud.
Coach, did you fall in love with soccer at all? Because there is something unique about lacrosse where a lot of people come to it and they're not really familiar with it. I know what happened with me when my son started playing. I fell in love with this game. I was like, oh my God, what an incredible game. Did the same thing happen to you with soccer, or is there just something special about lacrosse and unique?
I would say that I grew to appreciate soccer, and then I feel like at this point in my life, I'm an educated fan. I enjoy watching soccer, but lacrosse became a passion right away. There was, like you're suggesting, Eric, there was just something about it. I was a history major at Brown. I always enjoyed that part of the academic side of things. my best friend at Brown, who also was the best player in our class at Brown, was a Mohawk Indian from upstate New York. And so I immediately became fascinated with the Native American roots of the game, spent some time on the reservation. It all just kind of fit together for me in lacrosse. And to this day, I would suggest to you that there's something spiritual about the game. It touches me in a way that, you know, football never did. Soccer certainly didn't really. So I enjoy soccer a great deal, but it wasn't the same as the way that lacrosse kind of captivated my life.
The one other thing I'll say, and we always talk about it, the great thing I find about lacrosse is no matter what, you don't have to be necessarily a genetic freak to play it. You can be short and stubby. You can be tall. You can be average. You can be almost any size if you have the passion and you work hard. I mean, you have to have some gifts. There's no question. But yeah. You don't have to be born 6'7" to play it, or you know what I mean, or be able to jump 44 inches.
No, that's absolutely the case. I mean, at the Division I level, as the game has spread out throughout the country and the number of Division I schools has not grown by a great deal, the athleticism at the Division I level is better than it was overall back when I was playing. Mm-hmm. You know, the top 10 or 12 players in my era would still be top players now. But the depth of the players, the athleticism of the group in general is much deeper than it was back in that day. And but there is still, you go out and watch lacrosse at lots of different levels, Division II, Division III, Division I, II, and the club level is a really strong organization. There is lots of opportunity to play lacrosse. And again, if you have the passion for it, even if you're not a genetic freak like what you're describing, there's likely a place for you in the game somewhere.
Yeah. Well, Eric's saying that because he knows I'm 5'9", his son's 5'9". So there's a place for guys like us. At least there was, but I would agree. Right. I mean, I stopped playing 10 years ago now, and even 10 years later, the game is bigger, faster, stronger, but you've coached for 43 years. You've made it your career. What has stayed the same in the game and what has changed for you as you watch? I mean, as Eric said, you've been in the PLL, you're now at the high school level, which I'm sure is unique. And then spend so much time in the college game. Like, what have you seen stay the same, you know, in your 43 years, and what's different?
Well, I think the passion for the game overall, I think people feel very strongly about it. There's a sense of community in our sport that I think is unique to lacrosse. I don't take it for granted. I don't see it in the other games. That's still there. You know, when I started playing in the early 70s, we had just barely come from being a club program. And so it was really kind of informal, and, you know, everybody sort of felt like they were a part of it. We enjoyed it. The game wasn't overcoached at that level. But again, there was a sense of community among the participants that to this day, I think is still part. You go to Lake Placid in the summer, or you go to some of these summer events, that sense of community is still there. You know, the sticks, the going from wood to plastic, you know, changed the game a great deal. It not only made the game more accessible for folks, it was easier to pick a stick up and be able to stick handle when you could do it with a plastic stick. And nowadays, you know, in the old days when we were out evaluating kids, we'd be writing down whether or not they had decent stick work. Now, every kid can handle, you know, but what's remained the same is that I think coaches are still looking for those athletic those athletic kids, you know, the kids that have that instinct, that have that toughness and that enthusiasm. I tell people all the time, as most of the sports have moved toward that one sport model, I still think you're going to be better served as a young lacrosse player by staying involved in other sports. I think you become a better lacrosse player by playing football and basketball and soccer and all those other sports. And so that piece of it hasn't changed. When people ask me, what are you looking for, you know, when you're out there looking for players, you know, for me, it was always that, obviously, that athleticism, whether somebody can separate, you know, speed and quickness is the easy way to look at it. Sometimes somebody's got that IQ that Steele Stanwyck had. You could see that he was seeing the game faster than you were, or than the people on the field with him and all. But we're still looking for those qualities. And I think you deepen your athletic instincts, your sense of anticipation and these other things by participating in football and soccer and playing these other games, being exposed to what these other games have to offer. I still wince when a young guy tells me I'm giving up football to concentrate in lacrosse. You know, I don't consider that good news, and it's not advice that I'd be giving to a young player.
Well, I'll tell you what, one guy that was a multi-sport guy in high school and who was our first guest on this show, I don't know when that was, probably about a year ago or so.
Right when the pandemic hit. Yeah.
He played for you. And Pat went to my high school, DeMatha High School.
Yeah, sure. Absolutely.
And Pat told a great story about you, that not only are you looking for speed and quickness and great athletes and that sort of thing, but he talked about the letter that you sent him. That talked about how you were watching him get to the field before everybody else and sort of being a leader off the field, just even on the club scene, right, at the club tournaments. You noticed how he unpacked his bags, or you noticed how he interacted with the guys. You noticed the little things off the field beyond just what he was able to accomplish on the field. And he also, by the way, is not a big guy, as we all know, right? He's a smaller guy. Obviously,
he can separate.
He can separate. He's got the quickness and he's got the strength. We know that. And he's got the talent. But he's not necessarily a guy that would jump out at you right away when you first got to the field.
Right. And it goes to what you were saying in terms of, you know, not having to be the biggest and strongest and fastest in order to be recruited or to be able to find a place in the game. You know, Pat had all those other qualities that we look for. And I, you know, I'm around young people now every day with the Blue Ridge kids. But in days past, when I would go to camps, I'd be talking to these. I always be telling these young people that, look, the college coaches are looking at your body language. You know, you're at a tournament. You know, there's a break in the action. Do you go to the huddle? Are you paying attention to the coach? You know, do you go over and support your teammates when they make a play? You know, are you belly aching to the official and all? It makes a difference. You know, and so you know, in a perfect world, everybody has Pat Harbison's qualities, you know, and it doesn't work that way. But for somebody like Pat, who personifies all those things you like to see in a young athlete, you know, there's a place for him in the game. And, you know, I might not have guessed, frankly, coming out of high school, that Pat Harbison would be one of the better players in the professional league, in the PLL, you know. But he has made himself into that kind of player. You know, he listens, his attention to detail, he's smart, you know, there's a place for that in the game. And he's a good example of that.
You touch on a big thing for me. I talk about all the time, pretty much every coach we have on, it's just like culture and just what you're looking for as a coach. And sometimes you get a kid like Pat who brings a lot of those intangibles and then he spreads that throughout your team. Other times you get knuckleheads that you mold into great young men because of the culture that you've instilled. For you, 43 years, what does culture look like? You know, I'd be curious to hear your take on your programs, both at Brown, UVA, Blue Ridge. What are the things that define your programs?
A lot of it, Dane, it's been the same over the years. You know, the word culture can be a little bit overused at times. You know, it's more about what kind of values do you want to see in your players? What kind of values do you want to bring in the program? And to me, culture seems to imply that we're going to change your whole life. And to me, it's more about, you know, I always tell my players and these teams, I've told the Blue Ridge kids this, you know, in recent days, the culture of this program is going to be established on this practice field right here. You know, that we're going to do this on a daily basis. I always feel like there's two components to building a program. One is surrounding yourself with good people. And then two is creating an environment in which talent can flourish. And that's what the practice thing is about. Practice field is about. It's about creating an environment where, you know, what kind of values are going to be important. I told the kids, I had Blue Ridge kids the other day. It's been beautiful the last couple of days. You probably wish you'd been practicing these past
right.
couple of days.
Yeah.
So I go out to the field. I got a couple kids out there early. They're laying over on the side, you know, on the AstroTurf, you know, sunbathing. I'm immediately on their grill. You know, yeah. Now, you know, we're new. Those kids and them and me, we're trying to figure this out. But to me, it's always, you know, from the first day, we're establishing. Look, you cross the line, we're getting to work. You know, and so I want to, you know, I call you together on the field at the end of a drill, we're running over, you know, the little things that wind up making a difference. We don't, you know, we establish the non-negotiables for me are little things like, we don't go offside in practice. You know, that kind of attention. We touch the line. When we talk about touching the line, we touch the line. We never go, you never put your palms up. You know, some things are obvious. We're never going to retaliate, and you know, things like that. Nobody curses on the field. You know, so you establish those little things that that you can reinforce on a daily basis, and that begins to establish the kind of culture, the athletic culture that you want to see in your team and in your players and all. And So that's what, you know, that, and that's the fun of it. You know, what I missed about coaching for a couple of years there was the practice field and the process of coaching. You know, I love to walk in the locker room. I love to walk in be in the weight room when the kids are lifting. You know, I enjoy being on the practice field, yapping at guys. When I had good teams at Virginia, you get a Matt Ward and Kyle Dixon and Matt Poskendo, and you're giving them a little grief on the practice field, and they give it back to you, you know, in a respectful way, but they give it. That to me is the fun of all this, you know, and that's what I missed. I can frankly, and it's going to sound a little strange, I can frankly do without the wins and the losses. I can do without the results, the stress of the winning and losing, you know, but I enjoy being around the kids and the process of being a coach and kind of trying to build a team, you know, and at the end of the day, in essence, if we do it right, you know, the wins and losses are going to take care of themselves, or they're, you know, we're going to do as well as we can do if we do these, if we take care of these other things. And to me right now in my life, these other things are as important as anything else.
Right. You know? And you touch on something that we talk about.
Amen, by the way, to all that.
you touch on something, Coach, that we talk about often on this show. And I preach to my kids, all my kids are involved in athletics, and we, you know, they're involved in music and other things too. We want them to be well-rounded. But I keep saying to them over and over, there's nothing like being part of a team. I agree with you 100%. The wins and losses, they'll come. Hell, when we went to and Stevie, we decided to send Stevie to Dane and to St. Andrews.
He was my first recruit. His son was my first recruit.
Many wins or losses, but I knew that he was a special guy. There was going to be a special culture, and he was going to have a special experience. And there's just nothing like being part of a team. And you know, I work in sports and radio, and I have my own radio team, but I miss playing sports. And even though I never achieved anything of any significance, I was always on teams. There's nothing like being part of a team, and I think that's what you're saying.
I say that all the time to young people. There is it's a very unique opportunity. I tell these young people, guys that go to Blue Ridge or go to St. Andrews, go to Virginia or Brown, I tell them all the time, I said, look, fellas, you're going to have a great life. You know, you're going to find a great partner. You're going to get a great job. I said, but you're never going to have the opportunity to work with a group of your peers like this towards something special, you know, and you're never going to have this again. And there's nothing quite as satisfying as having a group of your friends and working towards something. Everybody makes a sacrifice in order for us to get to where we want to get to. And that opportunity just doesn't come up a lot, you know, after your athletic career is sort of over. And so you want guys to appreciate. I'm always telling the freshmen, you guys think you're going to be here forever, you know, we'll go talk to the seniors. They can't believe it's almost over, you know? So you just want people to realize that it's special and to take advantage of the opportunity when it's there. There's no promise of next year or anything else. All we've got is this right here, and let's try to make the most of it.
Coach, let's talk. We can't have you on and not talk about your run at UVA. Just incredible. 4 national titles. What went into the decision-making process to leave Brown for UVA? I mean, that's a great gig. No reason necessarily to leave. And then like sort of what stands out over your time there? I mean, do you ever just pinch yourself and go, I can't believe it. I mean, we won 4 national titles there. I'm sure when you were in the moment and you were going through it, it was cool and special, but maybe not as special as now when you look back at it.
Yeah. I would tell people that I would often say to folks that you know the winning was cool, you know, the championships are great, and I would say be saying to people, but it's the relationships are what stand the test of time. Mike Presser, the former Duke coach, who's now at Bryant College, if he was nearby, he'd always be whispering at me, it's easy to say that when you've won 4 of them, you know. And and so I'm careful with my language about that. I don't take for granted the championships and those good years, you know, and then you go back to the Brown thing. So I'm a Brown graduate. I'm coaching at Brown for 18 years. My wife's a Brown graduate. My four kids are all born in Rhode Island. We are very happy. We're embedded in the community. And then Jim Adams, the former coach at Virginia, I hear one day he retires. I come home very casually and innocently just say that to my wife. I said, Chrissy, I heard earlier today that Jim Adams is going to retire. And she turned to me. It's the title of my book, which was published about a year and a half ago. She said to me, I hope you'll be very happy. You know, implying, good, we're not going. You can go if you want, but we're not going. You know? So in the process of getting involved with Virginia, and I told them when I first met with them, I said, this is really not going to be about lacrosse. The lacrosse piece of this is basically a no-brainer. You know, I'm going to get a chance at Virginia. You're going to get it. We had great teams at Brown, but I said, at Virginia, you're going to have a chance to play at a higher level a little bit more consistently. But I happen to have complicated home situation. I have special needs twin daughters that are now 35 years of age. They were 5 or 6 back in those days. We had fought like crazy to get them into the regular classrooms in the community school in Rhode Island. And then they finally agreed to do that. And then when Virginia came calling, I said to them, look, I said, we are not going to start over again with this whole school thing with the girls, you know? So when I flew down here for an interview, they insisted my wife come with me. She spent the day in the public schools while I spent the day on campus. And at the end of the day, we knew that Charlottesville was ahead of where we were in Rhode Island for services for the girls. And so on that side of things, it just made sense. And Charlottesville is a beautiful area. And on my older ones, we're going to be able to stay in the publics if that's what we wanted to do here in Charlottesville. In Rhode Island, all of their friends in the high schools went to private schools. And so that really wasn't a choice. If my two older ones are very good students, all gifted and talented programs. So we moved to Charlottesville, the older ones, all four kids went through the same school district. They all stayed in the public schools. Great experience. And for my two young ones, the twins, 12, 15 years in the public school system, 3 years of a post-high school program, was as good a piece of our move as anything, any other part of it, including the lacrosse at Virginia. We've had a great experience here with our kids. So we were very thankful for that. And people here couldn't have been nicer. So it was much based on family as it was based on anything else, you know. And then again, the lacrosse piece of it was, that was going to be fun though, you know. It was only my second year. You know, Virginia had not had a great year the year before I arrived. And my first year, we got to the playoffs. Won a playoff game, made a little run. The second year, though, we played through to the NCAA finals, the overtime of the NCAA finals in 94. We played Princeton. We were down 3 goals in the fourth quarter. We beat Syracuse in the semifinal. They were the number one seed. We were 5. We were down 5 goals in the fourth quarter and 2 men down, came back and won in double overtime, and sent the championship game into overtime. It's only my second year here. We lost that game in overtime. But walking off the field feeling like, wow, we're gonna win it. This is easy. We're gonna win 100 of these things. Well, we don't win the next year. We get back to overtime of the finals the year after and don't win again. We don't win the year after that. Now it's 5 or 6 years that we've been here. We've had some success, but we haven't broken through to win that championship that Virginia, you know, sort of brought me here to win. Until that 98-99 season when we finally won our first championship and then kind of went from there. Lots of great players, you know, guys that I still remain in touch with all the time. But the Brown guys too, though, that was a great experience. And I tell young people, I tell coaches, it's not about the championships as much. It's about playing to your potential when we're talking to an individual team. You know, you might not have control over whether or not you can win the championship. But when you have a season in which you play as close to your potential as you think you're almost capable of, you know you've had a special season. That's what we're all striving for. More often than not, it's good enough to win a championship if you play to your best, you know. On that piece of it, both, like I say, in the Brown years and in these years at Virginia, great guys. It was a great run, and I still talk to those guys. And I'll be honest with you, in the last 5 years since I stopped coaching, I'm probably more in contact with all those guys than I was in the years that I was busy coaching. And it's been a joy to have the time to be able to talk to these guys now. You know, we talk to each other in a way that we never would have otherwise. And so, you know, it's kind of come full circle to the point where, holy molies, it is about the relationships. You know, that's what stands the test of time. I got the trophies are here. I can show you the rings if you want. I can bring them over here and put them on.
Let's see them. Let's see them.
You want to see the rings?
Yeah, grab some.
Want to see the rings?
Yeah, come on. Yeah.
It's all about the relationships, but it doesn't hurt to have the bling in the room.
He's still got the flex when he needs it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? All right, so Coach looks like he's in his office there. And, oh, look at that. He's got his little case. Oh, look at that.
That's pretty sweet. Yeah.
That's what I'm talking about. Beautiful.
Yeah.
I like it.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
So they're here. I mean, they're here and they're, like I say, it's special. You know, when you accomplish something like that, from the first one that we won in 99, Virginia hadn't won in 27 years. You know, that was meaningful, you know, and, 2006, we were undefeated national champions. That was, you know, that was a special run. And in 2011, the last championship, we had to dismiss a couple of kids of our best players during the season. We had our best defenseman got hurt, got knocked out of the playoffs. We won that championship with the most losses, regular season losses of any team in history. And, you know, so again, you know, those kind of things athletically, are certainly things that I'll always cherish.
Pretty amazing, and I think you might have knocked down Robert Morris in the year that you won the national title.
In 2011. That was our last
senior day.
2010, actually.
Yeah.
Were you on that field there, Coach?
Oh, I was on that field. Yep. Matt Bocklet with a little like C cut. I saw it on film about 10 times. Said inline play. Stanwyck's going to carry. Bocklet's going to kind of dive the crease and curl back, and he still scored on me, even though I knew it was coming. So I'll never forget that. But cool experience playing Clockner Stadium. It's a pretty amazing place. Coach, I'd be curious. I mean, I'm a big football fan, and Urban Meyer, I'm from Columbus, so I heard him talk a lot about what it's like to coach at a place like Ohio State, you know, premier sport football. The expectation is to win a national title, like it is at UVA. Can you talk, was it there that sense of pressure, especially after winning one? Was it kind of national championship or bust? I'm sure you go back to focusing on the process. That's why we do it as coaches, because it makes our lives a little bit less stressful. If all you think about is winning, you'll probably won't sleep much at night. But just talk about that. I mean, I can't imagine. I know winning one is tough, but then trying to do it again and then that pressure, just what was that like? And the experience there.
You know, at a place like Virginia, it's not unlike what Ohio State certainly experiences in football. There's a very narrow window for what people allow you to, how people allow you to feel like you've had a successful season. You know, at Brown, we might have been 7-5 in 1 year, and nobody was going to give us a lot of grief about that. You know, it might have been a good season, but we finished 7-5. But at a place like Virginia, you know, the expectation is simply that you're either going to be really playing on that final weekend or winning the championship, or you've been unsuccessful. And that's clearly not what actually happened, but that's the reality of it. And so what you've got to be able to do to a certain extent, Dan, is tune it out. You know, I was much less, you know, I tweet now. When I agreed to coach PLL, they said to me, you got to go on Twitter. I said, okay, show me what it is and show me how to do it. So I've only been doing it for about a year and a half or so when I first started, 2 years maybe, when I first started with the PLL. And I just didn't bother with any of that stuff when I was coaching still. You know, I just didn't have time for all that chatter, that distraction in the background, you know. And so we might have had a season where whatever, we got somebody hurt or we didn't get to where we wanted to get to. We never found the missing piece of a puzzle. And I know that our kids had played hard and we had all worked hard. And so people were giving us some criticism for it. It just, like I say, you just got to develop a little bit thicker skin, you know, in order to endure. I will tell you though, you know, I think I saw Lars's name on one of your podcasts, like Tiffany, you know, Lars played for me and followed me at Brown and followed me here. And so, you know, Lars was, he called me up when he was a candidate for the job, you know, and he was talking about how much he wanted to try to get the job at Virginia. And, you know, I'm in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, I hope you know what you're getting into, Lars, you know, because, you know, all of a sudden there's all kinds of pressure and heat And, you know, and some of that can, you know, can take some of the joy out of it unless you, if you allow it to, you know, and so you just got to kind of fight it off, focus on your family, focus on your players. And you can usually fight through that stuff. At the end of the day, however, at the same time, you know, when we won our first championship in 99, like I said, we had been here for 5 or 6 years and we hadn't won the championship yet. You know, we'd been close a couple of times. And my family, I've got 5 brothers and sisters. We moved my dad to show up. We had lost my mother and we didn't know what to do with dad. Everyone, my brothers and sisters said, look, we're going to send him to you, Dom. We'll all chip in and buy him a house in Charlottesville. I said, oh, this is great. They're going to send dad to Charlottesville and I'm going to lose my job here, you know, and if we don't win this championship here, you know, and then a year or two later, we won finally. And then went on a pretty good run over the next 10 or 12 years, you know, and my father loved being here. He never walked around any neighborhood without a Virginia lacrosse shirt on, you know, and it was a conversation start. I'd get a call from my dad like an hour before a game. Hey, Dom, can you put on these 6 guys? Can you put them on the gate list? I just ran into him in the deli and I told him I would take care of him if they wanted to go to a lacrosse game. You know, and I was like, Dad, what do you think, Dad? You know, and I was happy to do it, you know, and I was happy
That's
to do
great.
It.
That's great. That's great.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, you know, it comes with the territory. It can be a little unsettling at first. You just gotta learn how to sort it out in your life. So it doesn't become overpowering. And again, that's where you use your family and your players to focus on them. And you don't worry so much about the outside chatter of people that most people are not particularly educated about what's actually going on. You know, they're just rooting for their team or we're rooting for somebody else's team and want to give the opposing coach a little grief. It comes with the territory.
Coach, can you talk about recruiting and how recruiting has changed over the years and maybe some advice for parents? I know we have a lot of parents that listen to the show, maybe some high school kids that are listening. How recruiting changed for you when you were coaching and, I don't know, just advice you might have for kids.
So on the other side of it now too, yeah. Right, Dom? I mean, I said you're on the other side of it now too as a high school coach.
Yeah, a little
trying
bit.
To help kids get recruited.
I've got some neurotic high school juniors that you know sort of feel like, okay, Coach Darcy is now coaching the team. He's going to get me into Hopkins or he's going to get me into Virginia, you know. And it's certainly not that simple. You know, from Brown to Virginia, the difference was at Brown I needed to recruit, you know, 75 guys in order to find a dozen that could come to Brown and turn into players. At Virginia, I could focus on 25 guys and focus on a top 8 or 9 that I needed to try to get here and stuff. And, you know, so part of it I would suggest to you is what we've been talking about the whole time, which is that when somebody writes to me, I'm always telling young people, I said, don't write to me and tell me how coachable you are. You know, to me, that's the first sign that you're not coachable, is that you think you're coachable, you know. Don't give me the subjective piece of it. I'm going to be a really hard worker. You're a 10th grader. How do you know what hard work is? You know, what do you know what we're doing here in college? You know, but what I am interested in is, he's the tailback on the football team, or he's a center halfback on the soccer team, or he's the starting point guard on the basketball team at the high school. You know, we often go watch somebody play at a tournament. And he has a good tournament. There was a thing that I used to write down in my notes called the weekend warrior, weekend wonder. You know, somebody would have a good weekend and you weren't quite sure whether or not to believe your own eyes. Sometimes it was hard to tell what the level of the competition was. But if a young man is also on the playing football or basketball or playing these other sports, it generally corroborates what we might be thinking about him as an athlete overall. So that's information one. Nowadays, I think, you know, young guys, you can introduce yourself to coaches. You can write a letter to coaches. You know, these guys are terrific on the internet. I just had this talk with my sophomores and juniors at Blue Ridge. I said, you know, you don't have to bury the coaches in paperwork or in emails, but you can introduce yourself and give them some basic contact information. Tell them where you're going to be, what your plans are for the summer. Make their life easy. At the end of the day, you can trust that these coaches, these college guys, know what they're doing, you know, and what you can do for yourself most of all is prepare yourself to have a good season, whether it's your sophomore season or your junior season, or have a good summer, you know. And so you want to, you, in the more remote areas, you might have to work a little bit to introduce yourself to coaches, where, you know, a coach, you know, people might know the people at Boys Latin or at Gonzaga or DeMath or Landon or St. Paul's, where they might not know somebody from Brophy High School in Phoenix or some schools in California or Texas. So you may have to work a little bit harder there to introduce yourself to the coaches, but the coaches are going to do their job. They want to find the best players. And you know, it doesn't matter where you're from. You used to always hear, you're not going to recruit somebody from Florida, you know? And the truth is, yes, we are, son, if you're good enough, you know, you may have to help me find that out, but if you are, we're going to recruit you. Now, what has changed, Eric, is especially in this this new pandemic time, is that like starting this past summer and maybe going into this next summer, is that the coaches can't go out on the road. So coaches are learning to evaluate with videotape. You know, it used to be that you would always be saying, I got to see somebody with my own two eyes. You know, nowadays you don't even have that luxury, really. And the coaches are getting more familiar with videotape. And so again, these guys, so I would suggest to any sophomores and juniors is get your hands on some of your high school video. Again, these guys are really good at turning these into highlight tapes. And then you're thinking about, when you're thinking about what do I do with this summer, is what you might, there's so many summer events now that I don't think that there are any that are must go to, you know? So the question is, where are you going to go to? And that may be determined by scheduling, what works for you and your family, affordability. And the question you might want to ask these camp people, these tournament people, are you going to videotape the games? And will you give me access to the videotape as opposed to charging me for the videotape? There may be a hidden cost there in terms of them charging you for the videotape. And then you may want to take that tape and turn that around. And that's the next letter to the college coaches is, coach, here's a 5-minute videotape. In the old days, again, I would tell people, I don't want a highlight tape. I want to see you miss a shot. I want to see you miss a face-off. What do you do when you don't win the face-off? What do you do when you don't make the save? You know, but now there's so much of that. And now it's gone completely around. And you're telling people in those early communications with the college people, try to put a highlight tape in with your introductory thing. And in the highlight tape, put your best stuff in the beginning don't make it more than 5 minutes. Put your best stuff in the beginning. Because if you don't, I may not get to the end. I'm going to save this big goal I score until the end. No, put it in the beginning, you know, get my attention right off the bat. And then down the road, if we're still involved, I'll say to you, hey, look, can you send me a complete videotape of one of your high school games or one of your camp games so I can watch it more thoroughly? But in the beginning, you need to try to get my attention. And you can do that. Like I say, you can do that with video. And also, tell young people, be mindful of the music, for goodness sakes. You know, play to your audience, all right? Your audience is older guys. So just keep that in mind.
You want some like Grateful Dead in that, right? That's what that would be
Grateful
good.
Grateful Dead would be wonderful. You put a little Neil Young in there, would you please?
You know, it's funny though, because we had Drew McMahon on, Rob Morris's head coach, and I know he values film like a lot of coaches. You can almost over recruit because now you can watch these tournaments are uploading to almost the cloud to let these, you can have access to every single game. You can rewind and coach. I know you better know than all of us, but in recruiting, you're at a, maybe you need to see, there's a 1 o'clock game. There's three teams that you want to see play and you're going to watch a half of this game and turn your chair around and watch the other half. Now you can watch all of it. So I feel like as a high school kid, you gotta be on for the whole tournament because you never know what game they're going to pull up. And so I think all your advice is spot on, but I feel even as a high school kid, there's less margin for error.
Well, it used to even be in this, I was talking to somebody about this today, actually. It used to be that in the scouting, you know, we were always saying, I want to see all of our opponents with my own two eyes. You know, I want to see them live, you know? And then when they said a division one level, you can't go to games live. And we started scouting on videotape. You know, there is no way you would now give up your videotape for being able to go live, you know, because now we're all used to working with videotape. The recruiting is going to be the same. As opposed to getting in your car and driving all over holy heaven trying to chase down games of kids, you're better off going to the, tell me where you're going to be. Tell me what, you know, who you, you know, what number you're wearing, what team are you on, and I'll watch the videotape because I want to be able to go back and run it back and forth. You know, again, in the days when there wasn't so much video available, we'd be telling young guys, you should come to camp, you know, and I tell that to kids now. If it's not, it doesn't have to be Virginia. I said, but if you have a school that you love above all the others, go there to the camp. There's no setting that's going to be better for that coach to be able to see you, you know, than at the camp at his school. And I've recruited a lot of guys that came to camp at UVA because I could begin to appreciate the subtle skills that they had, the nuance of their game that you'd never get to appreciate when you're just turning your chair around and watching half of a summer camp game, you know. Yeah. You know, so it has evolved. You know, the young people have gotten, have sort of gone with the flow of it all. But you need to do a little, like I told my guys the other day, you need to do a little homework here. So you guys need to get going, get an introductory, you know, give me a list of schools, and you guys should begin to send an email out to these guys and just say, look, here's who I am. I'm really interested in your school, and I hope you'll keep an eye out for me, you know, and then maybe a month from now, you'll send them another one that says, here's what our high school results are so far. Here's my high school coach's contact information. And here's a videotape of a game I played early on, or some highlight tapes from my first half of the season. And then at the end of your season, right before the summer starts, here's what my summer plans are. I'm going to be at this and this and this. Here's a final copy of the highlight tape for my season. And I really hope I can come and visit with you. You know, I hope to, you know, I hope that our paths will cross. And so, again, you don't have to write to people every day or every week even, but I've told people also, I told my guys, is that these things work out the way they're supposed to more often than not. You know, there's an impatience in the process, especially when the parents are involved, you know, but I tell the guys, just hang in there, you know. You know, the best thing you can do for yourself is have a great spring, you know, be a player of some consequence. And then I can talk to coaches about you, and somebody's going to notice that, you know. We're not going to be able to sell something to college coaches that's not there. So give me something to work with, and then it'll take care of itself at the end of the day, you know. And what you really want, a school like Blue Ridge and probably like St. Andrews, most of your guys are Division III guys, and that's a world that high school kids don't think enough about. You know, you think about the wonderful Division III schools that are out there. You know, I went to Brown, you know, but if I had to go to Middlebury or Williams or W&L, or my son went to Lynchburg College, he had a great experience, you know. And so there's a whole world out there that people just need to, you know, some of the young people need to get out and do a little bit of their homework.
Coach, we can't have you on and not talk about your experience with the PLL, with Chrome. Can you talk about what that's like? I know Dan and I have been big fans of that. We know the Rebels, obviously, and just love what they're doing for lacrosse. Just the profile that they're putting lacrosse on, that deal with NBC has just been huge. Putting a great product out there. Last year was kind of weird with the tournament, but it was awesome. They kind of had 16 days to themselves there. It was a great showcase. But what was your year like there, and what was it like coaching some of those guys?
Yeah, it was I thoroughly enjoyed it. You know, it was a great experience, you know, flying around and having an opportunity to work with these players. They're all good guys. For me personally, family-wise, my daughters that I talked about earlier, they live in a group home setting, not too far from here. They come home on the weekends. And what I found in that one summer even was that I was flying off every weekend all around the country, and it was just a bit much. And in terms of what was happening around here. So I remain on the advisory board for the PLL, you know, but I stand slightly in awe of what Paul has done here, you know. Yeah. And watching the game, you know, in the middle of that pandemic summer, what a joy for all of us lacrosse fans to watch that stuff. You know, every day there were multiple games on. And then for us at the very end, Zed Williams, one of my favorite guys, one of our recruits here, and one of my players, you know, has an unbelievable, you know, final game, and they the Whipsnakes turn around and win their second championship and all. And, I was, you know, it was good and bad a little bit that the MLL I think it's good for the game overall that we have one professional league, and the attention can be consolidated in that direction. There's going to be some really, really good players that are not going to have a place to play this summer, you know. But again, I stand in awe of what Paul and Michael have done in terms of building that league and the platform with NBC. And, you know, for the players and the coaches, there was a sense that, you know, we're going to treat you first class, you know, we're not getting paid like baseball players or basketball players, but still, I think everybody was grateful. And the lacrosse, I would tell you, I would stand on the sideline, watch the games, and the other team would be making plays and my jaw would drop, you know? And so I was a fan, you know, as much as I was on the sideline there, you know, it was really neat to be up close and personal for a year and be able to take a look at that. And I hope that the interest in it continues to grow. I think it provides a great outlet for some really, really good players and you know, fans of the game like all of us that want to continue to watch the game. The neat part about it was that the telecast was so terrific. Lacrosse is a great game on television when you put the resources into it, you know, and that's what the PLL gave to everybody, over the last 2 years, you know, Hopefully we'll continue to see that grow. I think at the end of the day, they would like to go back to a city-based model, you know. I don't know exactly how that works because I think we may have discovered that this, you know, the travel show may be a better way to do it than the city-based model. But I think that's what I think that, and Paul had taught when we, the first year he had always said that he hoped that that's what it would get to at some point, you know? But like I say, if you were invested in the league, I think you'd feel like things are in pretty good hands. They've made a lot of good decisions.
It works out for the PGA Tour, just traveling from city to city. I mean, you can make that model work.
Oh, yeah. X Games, and there was a NASCAR. There were some models for it out there. And maybe that's what professional lacrosse needs to be. You know, we're coming to your city. Look, I'm not buying season's tickets. You know, I can go to any game. I don't need to buy season's tickets. If the Bayhawks are playing in Navy Stadium, but if the PLL is coming to town for one weekend, let's go. You know, and so whether it's, you know, Annapolis and New York and Oregon and around the country, they can find 10 markets, I think, that would be hungry for that kind of action. And again, like you said, maybe even though they might prefer to be city based in a more traditional setup, the barnstorming model just might be the future of professional lacrosse.
I wonder though, I was talking about it with someone else this week, just kind of watching the landscape of PLL. Obviously a lot of guys retiring over the past couple weeks and maybe they'd planned on it, but maybe like you, coach, the travel model for those guys as players when you're only getting paid X amount of money. And I know the PLL does a great job taking care of it, but as a young father of two kids right now, having to travel every weekend in the summertime and explain that to my wife, it would be a good problem to have, but I can imagine as a player, you might want to get back to the home base model.
The thing about it, our sport, what has changed in our sport is that, you know, half of those guys are making a living in lacrosse.
Yeah.
Whether they run their own camps and clinics, or, you know, they're equipment guys, or they play indoor and outdoor. And so for those guys, you know, you think of the Casey Powell, who's not playing anymore, but still involved in the game. For those guys playing in the PLL, they need the visibility of that, you know. But the other guys, you know, half the guys in that league are, you know, guys that are working on Wall Street. And I remember Ryan Conrad when he played here at UVA, and, you know, he talked to me quite a bit about it. His boss was not going to give him off on Friday afternoon every weekend, you know. And so his first year, he only dressed for a couple of games. He couldn't get away early enough on Friday, you know, and so you still got some of that, you know. It's better than it's been, better than it's ever been for some of those guys. But still, you know, it's still not quite, I think, what everybody would hope, but it's certainly moving in a new and exciting direction.
Well, coach, look, it's been unbelievable. What a pleasure to have this opportunity to talk to you.
I feel like we're just like scratch the surface. Oh, we got to have him back at some point.
Hours,
but I'll come back when you're tired or you can't get somebody. You give me a call.
We will do that. Coach, who, what, I know you're new to Twitter. I mean, over the last year and a half, I remember when you joined and they made a big deal of that. What do you want to promote? I know you're at the Blue Ridge School. Do you have a Twitter for that?
He's got a great book, by the way. You got to promote the book.
That.
And you're on the board with the Harlem Lacrosse, right? You know,
go ahead. I'm sorry, Dan.
I was going to mention the Harlem Lacrosse knot as well. Yeah.
Came out about a year and a half. I gave a book that came out about a year and a half ago called I Hope You'll Be Very Happy. I'm very proud of that. It's done fairly well, and they had a lot of interesting stories and lessons for coaches. I just finished up my second book. I wrote a book about Zed Williams, and went back up to the reservation. I went visited with Zed, you know, when we were recruiting him, and then when his dad passed, I went up for the wake, and then we went up when we decided to do the book. You know, after his MVP performance this summer, I went up to back up to the reservation twice this summer and twice this fall, and just finished up the writing of that. So we're hopeful that that maybe sometime this spring that will come out, and so you can keep an eye on it. And like a Blue Ridge now, you know, I'm recruiting the other way. I need some young guys. So you're running, of course, and if your son is a high school age, you know, and looking for a good boarding school, you give me a call.
Perfect.
As long as they look at St. Andrews first, I'm fine with that.
All right.
No, we're day and boarding. We won't compete. I'll let you know if I have any post-grad kids, though.
That'd be great.
It's going to be, I think you'll clean up over the next couple of years with post-grads.
Oh, yeah, that'd be great over there.
Yeah.
Coach, well, thank you so much. We really, really appreciate it. Of course, that's Coach Dane Smith. I'm Eric Bickle. That is the legend, Dom Starja. Thank you so much. We will talk to you next week.
Thanks, fellas.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.